G'day sports fans, happy Friday. I hope you had a great public holiday yesterday during Anzac Day. A couple of games of footy have already unfolded for round seven, but we've still got six games on the agenda for the rest of the weekend. So today's pod, I'm going to be touching on a couple of footy bits and pieces, talk through the fantasy headlines as well. I don't know about you guys, but the edit trade button is getting a serious workout with my trades this week, and there's a lot to discuss from an AFL fantasy perspective, so I will get to all of that and talk about the Sports by Fry bet of the week. I'm now 1-4 since I started doing that, but I feel like I'm onto a winner this weekend. And I want to touch on a couple of NBA things very quickly. I did a big deep dive earlier in the week running through each series, and I'm just going to kind of forecast ahead and have a look at the weekend's matchups and talk on a couple of the headlines in the NBA. NFL draft happened today as well for the NFL fans out there. There wasn't a lot that I don't think went to script. Weird that Atlanta decided to take a quarterback at number 8 after paying Kirk Cousins a shitload. But as the NFL season gets closer, I'm sure I'll unpack that from a bit more of a fantasy perspective as well. So, like I said, a bit of a quick episode, but I'll touch on a couple of important things. So let's get amongst it. I want to start with basketball. I, for one, am glad that we have the NBA playoffs firing, but it does feel weird. I think it was yesterday morning, Anzac Day morning. That's right. Kicked off with Boston and Miami, and it was a bit of a blowout, interesting late. And then we had OKC and New Orleans, and that game was a boil over as well. So it's not long before we're back to two or one games a day. Remember that, Hoops fans. So we have to make the most of the postseason action that we do have. We've got most of the teams playing over the Saturday and Sunday slate. I think the most interesting game that's coming up on the weekend is going to be between the Bucks and Pacers. Now, we know about Giannis's health status, and it's possible he might miss this entire series, but if things start to get hairy and it looks like they're going to lose, I would be shocked if Giannis didn't try and at least run out, even if, worst case, he was a decoy. But shout out to Indiana. They really needed to win that game too after Dame Lillard's scorching first half of game one. And as a result, they're heading back to their home court but I feel like they are slightly riding the momentum, and they are up in some senses, right? They've got two games at home now. If they can be up 3-1 going back to Milwaukee, that's going to put all the pressure back on the Bucks. If you're Milwaukee, even if you take a 2-2 split back home for game five, you're probably not full of confidence without Giannis in the lineup. So the result of this game three could be very interesting, because if the Bucks get it, they can probably take the foot off the gas a little bit in game four and go back 2-2. But if the Pacers win, then that game four is very, very crucial for the Milwaukee Bucks all of a sudden. The Clippers-Mavs in the next game on tomorrow. I think that the Mavs will still win this series, and I'll touch on that a little bit later when I get to the bets of the weekend. Timberwolves and Phoenix, I still think that Minnesota is going to run away with it, and there probably isn't a ton to talk about. I mean, it's going back to Phoenix. Game three there. Backs against the wall. We saw the Lakers in a similar position last night, and they came out of the gate gangbusters, and then the Denver Nuggets demoralized them. So some very interesting matchups. I do wonder if Miami are being slept on. I, for one, thought that they wouldn't win a single game. Like I said, it might be a gentleman's sweep here, and it still probably will be, let's be honest. But, man, the Boston Celtics, they just love to chuck threes and hope that it works out. And so far, for, let's call it the better part of 4 years, 5 years, it has worked out. I mean, they've gone on multiple deep playoff runs, but they haven't captured that elusive chip. And after watching the Celtics take on an 8 seed and then watching the Nuggets take on an 8 seed, Boston was the team that put so much distance between themselves and the rest of the conference this year. But at the moment, as we're watching the playoffs, it looks like Denver has that gap between every other NBA franchise. So fascinating couple of days of basketball coming up. Quick 30 seconds on the Cavs. Ugly win in game one, another ugly win in game two, and a huge, huge loss in game three in Orlando. So if they can win game three, game four on Sunday morning and take some momentum back to game five, they might get over the Magic in five, but I still think the Magic are going to win another game, maybe even two, and push this all the way to seven. So watch this space. I'm not happy with the awards that have been awarded so far. Before I transition into footy, I want to talk about the fact that Naz Reid is now the sixth man of the year for the 2023-24 season. And we've seen that Tyrese Maxey won the most improved award. And I also, I think on this same podcast, gave the most improved award to Tyrese Maxey because he took that leap from, call it, fringe star to bona fide all-star. But I do feel a bit hard done by for Kobe White. He was a guy who didn't really have a lot going for him. I personally thought that he was kind of plateauing, or there wasn't going to be much more growth. I know he's young, but We had a decent track record of what he'd done so far, but he was able to be arguably Chicago's most important player this season. So I was a little bit disappointed to see that he didn't get the edge. But like I said, I did technically side by picking Tyrese Maxey. The other guys who were also in this race, you could say, kind of fell off. I know Upper End Shingun was right in the mix. And it was a pretty close race as well. It was 319 points in the end for Maxey, and Coby White was second on 305. So I would have loved to see him win it, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to lose too much sleep over that. But the Sixth Man of the Year award, I think, it's losing its touch a bit. And you can't exclusively give it to players who have only played off the bench and start zero games. I understand that, but part of the reason why some people voted for Naz Reid was because when Karl-Anthony Towns went out, he started dominating, and it's, of course, he averaged career highs across the board. But like, Naz Reid started 14 games last season, which if you extrapolate that over an entire season, because he played 81, so he virtually can, it's about a sixth of the games of the year. So it's not a huge amount, but the guy started a sixth of the year, and that pumped up his stats. If you were looking at his stats as a starter compared to as a reserve, there's not a massive difference, but there is a difference, right? As a reserve in 67 games, Reid averaged 12.6 points and under 5 rebounds a game. When he started, it was 17.6 points and 7 rebounds a game. So if his averages were deflated because he didn't start as much, then I still think a lot of people would have sided with Malik Monk, who was my pick. I know he got hurt, but he still put up 71 games before he went down. And he actually only went down to Naz Reid in the total voting by about 10 points. So I was a bit bummed to see that. I think of, you know, Steph Curry can have the Clutch Player of the Year award. I think he deserves to have one on his resume. Probably should have gone to DeMar DeRozan, but whatever, that's a strange award. The most improved, like I said, Tyrese Maxey took a massive leap, so you can't really hate that. But this one doesn't sit right with me. We gave the award to a guy who started a couple of games and improved his stats, and as a result, he walks away with the hardware. I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it, but yeah, I just feel for Malik Monk because I felt like the season that he put together meant that he should have been the Sixth Man of the Year. If we look at Bobby Portis, who finished third, he only started 4 games this year. And then there's other guys like Norm Powell, Bogdanovic, Alvarado. These guys aren't starting a lot. So I feel like if we're going to pick a Sixth Man of the Year and reward a player who exclusively thrives off the bench, they went a little bit awry here by picking Naz Reid. Most people didn't have work yesterday, so I'm sure you got to watch plenty of the footy. A draw on Anzac Day between Collingwood and Essendon, which naturally will drum up the age-old debate of do we need extra time. Personally, I think no, fuck it. I love the tradition of a draw. It's a weird feeling, of course, and everyone is like, oh, I want more footy. Why don't we play an extra 5 minutes? Well, what do you do if it's tied after that 5 minutes? Do you have a kickoff? Do you then play another 5 minutes? Do you just award a draw after that? Because if so, that's dumb. It's a waste of an extra 5 minutes, in my opinion. But I do think that the draw holds a special place in AFL folklore. And I don't know if there's many people listening to this that watched the 2010 draw between St Kilda and Collingwood. That's a memory that I'll have forever. The collective sigh and everyone looking around confused. I kind of enjoy that about our game. It is quite unique in a footy sense. I don't have a huge conviction. So if we do vote for extra time, I'm sure that there's a way they can tweak it into the game and make it a bit similar to the final structure, 5 minutes each side and then next score wins or something of the sort. But yeah, I still like the draw. So great result, personally, I think, for Collingwood. Seems like Essendon were rolling all over the Pies. And then naturally, the Magpies did their traditional comeback in the second half. Well, I think technically it was closer in the second quarter. But regardless, I think it was great for them to steal 2 points. The other game that we saw yesterday, I don't really want to touch on Melbourne and Richmond too much. Shout out to the D's, good 4 points bank there. But GWS had the fucking blowtorch on the Lions. And I didn't tip Brisbane, but I was leaning towards it because I thought not a lot has gone right for them this season. And they really need to steal this one against GWS if they want to be in the mix for a premiership. Now, I'm not going to say in round 7 with 4 months roughly of footy to go that Brisbane are cooked for the year, but they're now sitting at 2-5. And most alarmingly, they haven't won a game at home yet, which is meant to be the fortress. They went 13-0 there last year, 0-3 at the moment in 2024. So alarm bells are ringing for Brisbane, and it just further entrenched in my mind that GWS deserve to be the flag favourites. You can say that Geelong are the form team of the competition, and technically, if they beat the Blues this week, they'll still be sitting above GWS on the ladder. They might still be sitting above them even if they lose, but I do think that the Giants are the best team in the competition. That team that they rolled out last night against Brisbane was still missing Stephen Cornelio, Toby Green and Sam Taylor. And there's a lot of young prospects that I like on the Giants list. Finn Callahan is starting to come into his own. We saw Darcy Jones on debut add a little spark to their forward line. Leeka Lear is a player over the last fortnight that's generating a lot of headlines with his athleticism and ability to spoil the footy. So I love the GWS Giants and the way that they're working. And I kind of regret not putting my financial incentives behind them rolling into 2024. So we'll have to wait and see how the rest of round 7 unfolds. As I said at the leadoff though, huge, huge things going on for the AFL fantasy world. Personally, I managed to lock in Taj Woden as one of my trades on Wednesday, before that game started. And it's been very bizarre after the fact, trying to toggle pieces around so they can have 22 green dots on my field. So as it stands right now, I'm actually trading out Zach Fisher for Woden. I did have Zach Williams in this spot initially and was quite happy with the balance of my team. Then the news came out that Riley Sanders was omitted, not playing at all this week. So I switched up and ditched him. Now that we know that Zach Fisher is going to be the sub for North Melbourne tomorrow, I think he has to go. He's got a break even of 85. It's a score that he's only hit once so far this season. So if he's starting as the sub, he could get lucky and come on and score a 50 or a 60. He might be really unlucky and come on and put a score in the teens, or he might be, woeful and come on for the last 2 minutes. Worst case scenario, get a donut and dramatically drop in price. So he was someone I was eyeing off trading regardless. He actually dipped a little bit in value last week. So I'm getting out of the Zach Fisher camp, and I'm also flicking out Luke Jackson, who's a player in a very similar position. He dropped 30K last week, break even of 121. He's got to go, and I'm replacing him with someone who should have started in my team instead of Luke Jackson in the form of Isaac Heaney. I was able to bank Max Gawn's vice-captain score on Thursday night, and there's a lot of coaches who are probably in a similar position. But when it comes to shuffling rookies on your field, there's a few out there that give us a little bit of pause. Now, because I'm keeping Riley Sanders and a few of these other players, I don't have a lot of flexibility with regards to looping players' scores. But a lot of coaches will be stuck in the similar position, choosing between Darcy Wilson or Hugo Garcia tonight. And I think I'm slightly in the camp for Darcy Wilson. It does scare me a little bit, I'll be honest, because the man dropped a 35 not too long ago. And I mean, his scores have been solid recently, but they haven't been fantastic. But he's played a lot of game time for the last two against GWS and the Bulldogs, respectively. And in those games, he's gone 61-70. So I do think that even though Port Adelaide traditionally are a really hard team to score against, Darcy Wilson stands the best chance of getting to that 60-point threshold. Inside mids struggle against Port Adelaide, and I can't see Hugo Garcia laying enough tackles to outscore Wilson this week. He could come out and run with Zach Butters in game 100 and maybe lay 8 tackles and get himself to a 50 or a 60. I can see it happening, but I could also see him getting subbed out of the game if they try and shuffle the magnets around. Angus Hastie will probably start as the sub. By the time you're listening to this, you might know even Hugo himself could be the sub, but I don't think that's going to be the case. But it does concern me slightly that A, he could be a sub off candidate in a red vest, and B, he might not get the tackles he needs this week to become a great scorer. He did excel against the Bulldogs last week, and I still think you can trade him into your team. In a perfect world, though, you leave him on the bench this week and play Darcy Wilson. Oliver Dempsey is another player that some coaches are concerned about. He hasn't been the sub yet this year, so I don't think that there's any worry there. And when you look at the bench, you look at him and you're like, shit, Dempsey might be the worst one on the bench. They could give it to Mitch Duncan from the Pine, but Geelong are dumb. Dumb's not the right word. Geelong try to be too smart. So I expect Cam Guthrie to be the sub who is named on the ball. The dude's missed, this is his first competitive game of footy in over a year. He's come back from a torn quad. I'm surprised, honestly, he's not playing in the VFL, but maybe playing him as the sub means that they can still utilize his best traits and they can still get something out of him and he can play somewhat managed minutes. Maybe they start him and sub him off as well is another thing to consider. But I do think that Ollie Dempsey will be fine. I'm playing him on my forward line this week, and I think that there's a lot of coaches who are kind of backed into the corner and might have to do a similar thing. Zach Williams, some coaches are flicking him out, but I think his score of 70, a break even of 76 against Geelong is kind of attainable. I know he got subbed out last week against the Giants, and that was his lackluster effort, but he looked pretty good against the Crows the game before that. And even against the Dockers, a game I watch obviously very closely being a Freo fan, he was still getting the good spots and laying some tackles and doing his thing. So I've still got a little bit of faith in Z Will, but I don't have faith in Fisher and Jackson. So that's why those two go out this week for me. I could get Sanders out and keep Fisher, but with his dramatic price dip incoming, I think getting out of those two dudes and holding a red dot, you know, their price isn't going to change. So you can bring him back next week. It's the same reason that I'm keeping Harley Reid. Different if West Coast were saying we're resting him for 2 or 3 weeks. That might change my tune, but we all expect Harley Reid to be back next week. Small little flag though, Footscray does have their VFL bye this round. So Riley Sanders won't get an opportunity to go back and stake his claim for a spot in the team. So it's very possible that he doesn't come back in at all next round in round 8. So I'll probably look to flick Sanders out next week. If Williams struggles, then I can go him as well. But being able to shuffle Fisher and Jackson to Heaney and Tajwo Wondon does leave me with 270K in the bank. So hopefully I can go out there and make a couple of other moves around the edges and maximize the large fries and Coke moving forward. I dropped my rookie trade targets just a couple of hours ago. Well, actually, it was about 30 minutes ago. But basically, I went through and talked about the remaining rookies and the best possible trade targets. Now, if you're a Patreon subscriber, I will do these trade targets ahead of the first game of the round. So on Wednesday, I actually dropped out that Will Graham is still the number one dude. If you don't have him, negative break even, there's nothing wrong with pouncing on him still. Hugo Garcia, despite the matchup he's got tonight, I think he's great. Tajwo Wodan was number three for me. I thought that because he's out of the vest, he could roll in that kind of halfback plus six type matchup. I didn't expect 69 points. Nice. I thought that he'd be getting something around the high 40s, low 50s, but forward defender status as well is very versatile. And I went back and watched his highlights against Brisbane, and he does lay a lot of tackles for someone that's kind of a small defender. So I liked that, and that's why I had him third. If you missed out on him, though, obviously we've still got Blake Drury as a possible trade target. He's probably the only other rookie that I really like this week, and I like him because he has a negative break even. He's got negative nine next to his name, so if he comes out and scores 40, he still outscored his break even by 50-ish, right? If he goes out and he scores 60 and looks really good in the side, then he's in for a massive price hike. So I think this week I'd rather pay up for someone like a Blake Drury compared to the other trade targets that we have on offer. I know that there are a few other players and a couple of debutants we haven't touched on yet that will intrigue people, but you know, Cooper Simpson might be the sub for Fremantle. Lot to like about him, but you can wait a week as a 200K mid forward. Riley Hardiman. The first thing that I think about when I think of Riley Hardiman is Zach Fisher's the sub, and that seems like a natural positional switch. Maybe Colby McKercher even could get dragged just danger zones, but I think Hardiman will be all right. I don't expect him to score in great bunches. He hasn't been in the VFL, so I'm thinking his production will be similar to someone like Callan Dawson, who's been in the side previously. Riley Garcia is an interesting one for the Doggies. He's a 332 forward, but he's only played the one game last week. He'll obviously play again this week, but he might start as the sub too. And if he doesn't, I do wonder kind of how he fits into that team with Tom Liberatore returning and Jack McRae starting to find his mojo. So from a rookie standpoint, I think Hugo Garcia and Drury are probably the only ones I'd go for this week. You could argue that Biggie Nguyen is an option with a negative break even as well, but I'm still just not a huge fan. I think that playing that lockdown key back role does really make me nervous. So if you're looking for a rookie, Garcia or Drury are the one. If you desperately need a defender, you can roll the dice on Riley Hardiman, but don't be shocked if he scores a 40 to 45 this week. I'm hoping I'm wrong and he comes out and goes gangbusters, but yeah, the writing is on the wall for him to struggle against the Crows. Quickly casting my eyes over some of the other trade targets, a lot of people would have grabbed Dacos or Caldwell already this week. If you grab Dacos, you won't be too butthurt. He didn't get to triple figures after a late handball was taken off. But 98's all right. I feel like he's still going to be a top six defender, so it's fine to have him in. Jai Caldwell, not great, 71 return, but he did smash his break even by about 30 or 40, so it could be worse. I know that it's not an ideal score, but he does face the Eagles at Optus next week, so hopefully he can get back to scoring triple figures. Jack McRae is still the second most traded in player. And personally, I'm a little bit worried about him. I've said it a couple of times since he had this big, massive score. I don't think he can pull the trigger yet, but he is fucking cheap at 715K. So it's a genuine coin flip, in my opinion. And everyone will have their own standpoint on whether they think Jack's back, whether they think he can keep churning out hundreds. He might only go at a rate of 95 from here on out, but that's still put him in the line to be one of the best forwards. So I'd much rather just get another week of watching him with Libba in the side and seeing how he fits into the nucleus. But I mean, if you look at it, he's averaging 78, so far this season. And sure, there was one ripper in there, but there was also a sub-affected score in there. So they kind of balance each other out. It's not like he's averaged 100 in the other games that he's played so far. So I think it's worthwhile waiting a week. A lot of other people still jumping on a couple of the popular missed premiums. Nick Martin was flicked in by some. Sam Walsh is another popular trade in this week, as is Sam Flanders. Both of them should go gangbusters. And looking at people, players that coaches are trading out, it's a lot of the names you expect, right? Riley Sanders is here. Nothing wrong flicking him out. Zach Williams, like I said, I'm confident he can make his break even, but he's averaging 10 points less. So if I didn't have Zach Fisher as the sub, I'd be considering trading out Zach Williams. Another dud in the back line, Massimo D'Ambrosio is out managed, so you can get rid of him. And then the two blokes that I'm flicking, Jackson and Fisher, are 4 and 5 on the trade out list with Tom Stewart at number 6. So a lot of flatlined mid prices, call them, that are being given the axe at the moment this week. It's still time to try and get these rookies off your field though. So if you are sitting in a position where you have a green dot like Zach Williams, Luke Jackson, Zach Fisher, you got to weigh up the risk versus the reward. Do you want to bring in someone who can play this week and be a gun and potentially have another rookie filling the spot? Or do, like I'm doing, you go Jackson and Fisher out and you try and ride it out this week and then see if you can get another upgrade this next round. It's going to be very tricky, but the rookies do have to go. Remember that. So it's no coincidence to see that amongst the top 10 traded out players, I think there's half a dozen rookies mixed in there as well. So watch this space. Hopefully the ones with the green dot associated next to their name score well. And we start with Garcia and Wilson tonight. I would love for both of them to go off because it's very possible that I'll need two good scores from those rookies this week. And that's it. Short and sharp. Another potty in the books. I'll be back recapping round 7 from the AFL fantasy realm next week. Might even be able to coax a co-host on to sitting down with me and yarning plenty of basketball and footy. Good luck, though, to all the fantasy coaches out there for the rest of the round 7 AFL fantasy action. Good luck to the Cavs as well on Sunday. Make sure you go up 3-1, boys. That'd be lovely. As always, though, I do appreciate you listening to this episode, and I'll catch you next time.